Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. We have a big show today. I'm interviewing two-time NBA champion Isaiah Thomas about his involvement in the wine world and how he got involved in making a champagne. It's an amazing story. He has some great stories about the NBA, drinking with players, and his opinion on THC and CBD for sports. It's a pretty interesting interview. But first, today's show is brought to you by our blind tasting card game, Blinders. We have been inundated by people asking how to get it. It is now shipping. Our second printing is out for shipping right now. It's at blindersgame.com. This is a game where you can use cards, you supply the wine, and you learn how to blind taste, and you can compete against everyone else at the table. It is a hell of a lot of fun. We took a lot of time thinking this one through, and we hope you enjoy it. Also, on SOM TV, we have quite a bit. We have a lot of news coming. We have an amazing original film launching in just a couple weeks. We have all sorts of new products. And the Isaiah Thomas piece that you're about to listen to actually is a documentary that is up on SOM TV right now that you can stream. SOM TV is free with a week's subscription, so there's no reason not to give it a shot. You can also watch our original film, The Delicacy, which is also streaming, and tons and tons of new stuff. We have new podcasts coming, new shows. It's going to be a very, very exciting summer. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Isaiah Thomas. I have to say, man, this is a huge, huge honor for me. As a kid, you know, I collected cards with you on them. I watched you countless hours. My whole team is very excited about this, but I can't tell if I'm more excited about the fact that you've entered the champagne world, which is it's a more difficult place to go and try to make wine. I want to start back at your NBA days when you were playing. What was the wine scene in the NBA?
There was no wine scene. I would have to say that the wine scene came from my family, which was still, you know, Richard's Wild Irish Rose and some Strawberry Hill and Boone's Farms.
Sounds like we had the same upbringing when it comes to wine.
Yeah.
So nobody was drinking wine in the greater NBA or when you were in college playing basketball. What were they drinking?
You know, I would say, you know, in terms of the wine drinking, you know, you would always go out and order a glass of red wine or white wine, but you had no idea what you were drinking. You had no idea where the grapes came from, if it was Chardonnay, if it was Pinot. You had no idea. You were just kind of going with the flow in terms of a red or a white.
So then there's got to be a point when you said, all right, I feel something about this beverage. What was this turning point for you? Was it when you were younger? Was it recent?
It was very recent, and it was really about the champagne space more so than, you know, just getting into the wine space. And I had just sold my company called Popcorn Indiana, and when you walk through the airport, you see that red bag of kettle corn. And, you know, I went to Indiana, so Indiana popcorn, you know, cream and crimson, so, you know, go figure, right? But I just sold my popcorn company, and I was actually looking for my next venture to go into. And, you know, for so long, the spirit space had been attractive to all of us. And watching what George Clooney had just done in tequila, everyone kind of, you know, was like, wow, you know, George hit it out of the ballpark, and it was Clooney and friends. And so I looked at that space from a business aspect, and what I quickly realized is that there's a new wine comes out every month, there's a new vodka that comes out every month, there's a new tequila that comes out every month, and they're all great. So, I always wanting to be a little different and try to set yourself aside, I looked in the champagne space just out of curiosity. And looking in the champagne space, what we quickly discovered is that, like popcorn, most people can't really name 4 to 5 champagnes top of head. And that gave me the thought that if I could enter into this space and quickly brand a champagne, I got a chance to really be in business. Now, that was just from a business standpoint. And then the Sherlon family was introduced to us. And the Sherlon family was actually looking to bring their product into the United States and expose people to their champagne-making skills and ability. And they've been making champagne in the family for 9 generations since 1788. Thus, we call it Sherlon 1788. went over, met the family, and started understanding a little bit more about the champagne industry, and quickly discovered that our niche would be we are the highest volume producer of first press grape champagne. And as you know, there are three presses of the grapes. And there's the first, second, and the third press. And of course, I asked the question, well, what press have I been drinking? And, you know, I rattled off a couple of names and they go, well, that actually is the third press of the grapes. And then they told me what the third press was made for in terms of, you know, the third press is usually made for vinegar and perfume. And they started talking about why you get a headache because I was like most people. I said, well, you know, a lot of times I'll drink some of the champagne and I'll get a headache. Why do I get a headache? Well, it's high in sulfites, very high in sugar. And they said the American palate craves sugar. And that's when the light went off. I said to myself, I don't believe that that's going to continue to be that way. I think just as we learned more about the food industry and we started asking questions like, where does this tomato come from? What's in this product that we're buying? I do think that that is going to hit the champagne space. And what we wanted to be is the leaders in terms of educating the public about what it is that they're drinking, the first press of the grapes, and why you get a headache when you drink it, and why you should basically ask for, you know, the first press. And then I started, you know, learning about the grapes, you know, what champagne is made of, the grapes that they use. We only use three grapes, and all champagne is made in the Aube region of Champagne, which is the oldest region of Champagne. We use three grapes. We use the Pinot Noir grape, we use the Pinot Blanc grape, and we use the Chardonnay grape. We do not use the fourth grape, which is the Pinot Monet grape, which is a fast-growing grape in the champagne space. And as you know, the Pinot Blanc grape is the most difficult grape to grow in the champagne space. And fortunately enough for us, the land and the geographical area that we sit in, we're capable of growing the Pinot Blanc grape. And all of our champagnes are the first press. So I hit the pause button right there because I know I was long-winded with that answer. But as you can tell, I get excited about when I talk champagne.
No way. This is fantastic. I love this. I mean, first of all, not only do you know your stuff, which I'm not surprised by, but it's the passion that is, this is so good. So let's talk, take a step back about, I want to understand from you, why champagne? Why not just do something in Napa? Why not make a tequila like George Clooney or make a mezcal or so? Why champagne? I mean, I have been there numerous times. It is not a region that's, I don't want to say it's not welcoming. It's just not, there's not tasting rooms everywhere. It's a tough place to get into.
Yeah.
Tell me, how the hell did you get to Champagne and why did you pick that region?
Well, as you can see, the Cherlon family, they're very, very rebellious family in terms of anti-establishment. And they're true to their tradition of champagne making. And not only are they true to their tradition of champagne making, but what they really wanted to do was expose champagne to the masses. And that was my goal also. And, you know, when you say why champagne, I always strive to get the best of the best. And when I heard that champagne was the drink of the gods, I was like, okay, well, you know, I want some of that. And all of us, right, when we think of celebratory moments or those special moments in our lives, we always want to celebrate it with champagne. That's the first thing that comes to mind. What I wanted to do was bring a high-quality champagne into the United States that is the first press of the grapes and give it to you at an affordable price where you can not only enjoy champagne, not get sick from it, but also not blow your rent money. So myself and the family, we met in that place because that is exactly what they wanted to do, was expose champagne to the masses, because the first press is the best press. And what the masses have been used to getting and drinking is the second and the third press. And a high quality champagne that's produced at the volume that we're capable of producing, that we can produce 1 million bottles annually from our vineyards. So all of our champagnes are the first press. And then we got 100% Pinot champagne, which is the only 100% Pinot that I've seen in the market. And if you know of another one, let me know. Then there'll be two. And that is zero sugar. What we demanded in our 100% Pinot, which I was Le Champion, was we wanted zero sugar champagne. And that's zero sugar added. The champagne.
So no dosage. You guys are doing no dosage at all.
No dosage. Except for in our Brut. Our Brut has 5 grams of dosage, which is 1 gram per glass. And our Rosé Dessaunier, they say Dessaunier, but then I put my West Side Chicago slang on it and I say Dessaunier. But that only has 8 grams of sugar, and that's 100% Pinot also, made from the Pinot grape, the Pinot Noir grape. So the low sugar and the zero sugar is where we at in the market. We're the fastest growing champagne that's in the United States right now. And that's Chirlan Champagne and our unique partnership with the NBA players, the 450 players who are also equity members in this space with me in the champagne space. We just try to, spread the word about the best quality at the lowest prices. My econ teacher taught me that in high school, so I still use it today.
That's a pretty good policy if you can stay with it, yeah. So when it comes to being an American, did you have any problems in France coming in and saying...
we had a little, and as you know, I'm the only American that's really doing business, in the champagne space in terms of having the rights to own the grapes. They will not let American own land, but I own the rights to all the grapes that come off the land. And
what was that process like? Tell me more about this. This is fascinating.
So it was an interesting process in terms of negotiations, as we continue to negotiate and talk and really come to an understanding of how we can basically import the product, get it across the water, and then have it stay on the shelf long enough where we can maintain the high quality. The family at that point in time, they didn't think that. There was enough of demand for zero sugar and low sugar champagne. So we went back and forth for about a good 6 months in terms of trying to come to an agreement in terms of what the American palate actually is moving towards instead of what the American palate actually truly is today. And the moving towards, it took a lot of, convincing for the family to come on board. But, once the family came on board and once people started actually tasting the difference between zero sugar and low sugar and 20 grams of sugar and second and third press of the grapes, I mean, there's really no contest. We got the only 90-plus rated portfolio of champagnes in the United States. Now, there are some other 90-plus rated champagnes, but in terms of a portfolio of champagnes, I'll just say we're the only one that I've seen. And again, if you know of another one, please let me know. But the negotiations, they were intense because the language barrier, right? I don't speak French. The family wasn't very fluent in English. However, again, the bond and the relationship that Thomas, who is our champagne maker, and my name is Isaiah Thomas, his name is Thomas. So we bonded there, and then we bonded, from an understanding of we want to give the customer and the consumer the best of the best of the Champagne region, but also the best of the best from the Champagne, from the Chirlan family. So negotiation-wise, it became a place of mutual understanding of where we wanted to get to, and then we had to negotiate the other parts with the French government and also the champagne industry, which was very welcoming to myself personally.
Okay, so when you look at champagne, it's lots of these different little villages, Aiguillerier and all these different Menil-sur-Auger and these tiny little places. Did they know who you were? Were they familiar with the NBA? I mean, you played... I just want to say, maybe this is my age. Maybe it's the fact that I'm the age I am. But when people speak about the NBA, I think about I mean, I'm from Cleveland, so of course I think about my beloved Cavs, who never made it to the finals then. But I also think about, you know, the Pistons and the Bulls and all of this. And I mean, that was the time. For me, that was the time. And I wonder, that would have been the same age for them. Did they know who you were?
They knew who I was briefly on the basketball side, but really they talked more about what I had done business-wise. And it was interesting because when we met, they had the cover of Forbes magazine, which I was on in 1992. I was chairman of a company called American Speedy Printing that we had just taken out of bankruptcy, my partner Rick Innitome and I. And then I was one of the co-founders of the Toronto Raptors, started an international franchise, the first international franchise that was started in the NBA outside of the United States. And it's currently still the only one that exists outside of the United States is the Toronto Raptors, the franchise that I was one of the co-founders of. And then they looked at all the businesses that I had started up, you know, startups. So my specialty is startups and turnarounds in business. And so they sought me out that way. And of course, then there was the basketball part that was intriguing also. But it was more about, you know, the international business that I was doing that they thought that it would be very helpful and beneficial to them trying to launch a product into the United States.
Man, this is such a unique, wonderful story because you're both positioned to really, I mean, we always like to, I like the term democratize wine. You know, it doesn't really matter, you know, race or creed or even sometimes how much money you have. Wine itself is transcendental and it can bring you to different places and it's a beautiful product. So you are in a remarkable position to really widen that scope. I love that you were doing this. Did you learn any lessons at all playing basketball that apply to wine? Were there any things from, because I obviously business, of course, I get that. Business in a lot of cases is business and you adapt, but was there anything from a standpoint of playing and working with a team or anything like that that you can apply to the wine world, negative or positive?
The positive that I would say that I immediately found was just like we have a basketball or a sports community, we have a wine community. And in that champagne, wine, sports, entertainment community, guess what? They love each other. Truly do love each other. And I'm talking about like love at first sight. Like you can't be at a sporting or an entertainment event without, you know, the spirits being there. And the spirits like to be around sports and entertainment. So my idea was to marry the two and marry it with the best of the best. So in every sporting event, every entertainment event, you know, the pinnacle of success is when you get to celebrate with your bottle of Chardonnay champagne, right? That's, you pour it on your head, you drink it, you toast it, everything else. And marrying these two industries, to me, is the perfect match. And they've always kind of, you know, danced with each other. And it's kind of been a cultural, traditional dance that no one has really acknowledged. And what we wanted to do was acknowledge the dance that was taking place between the spirits, sports, entertainment from a cultural standpoint and bring it to life. So I would also say this in terms of marrying the two, the communities, what I found so interesting is that you can go out to dinner every single night and have and meet guests from all around the world, different parts of the world, different, you know, races, cultures, you know, whatever. And you can sit down and have a conversation with somebody about this, about champagne, about grapes, about the land, about, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful way of talking and communicating with each other. And I found that to be really, really the best thing that's happened. This is the, outside of playing basketball, this has been the funnest business I've been in because you get to meet new people all the time and you get to have conversation and you always can say, excuse me when I say this, hey, I'm working. right? You can always hold up the bottle and say, I'm working, you know? And it's been great. I've actually enjoyed it and love it.
That's so true. I wish they would loosen the laws on writing off booze a little more from the tax standpoint.
Yeah. Well, you know, then the politics get involved. And fortunately enough for me, being in sports, that's my dog Rascal, who's laying in the back. So, you know, he hasn't had any Sherline champagne. He's just a little lazy right now.
Sure he hasn't.
So this is where being in sports helps you politically, because in sports, there truly is, you know, we try to have a society that doesn't, what's the word I'm looking for, is not hampered by race, religion, color. You know, it really is a society that works in sports. You know, we bring in everybody from all different walks of life. You can put 20,000 people in an arena, and they can be Republicans, they can be Democrats, they can be Islamic, they can be Catholic, they can be Christians, whatever. And they'll come to that space for 2 hours, and they may not get along outside of the arena. But for those 2 hours, when they're inside of the arena, yay, man, you know, smiles, laughs, you know, disappointment, all the emotions that you go through in a basketball game, and you bringing all those people together from all different walks of life, to me, that is the perfect society. What I find in the wine community, in the champagne space, is a chance to replicate the perfect society.
Man, well said. Do you, it's funny to talk to you because I'm going to just say, as a fan of yours, I didn't expect to be talking to the sweetest man that I've talked to in a long time. I mean, you have a reputation of being very competitive. And
oh,
so,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about that competition, and does it bleed into this space? Do you feel like that's it? I got to be the best. And how do you feel about your competitive nature in the space of wine?
100% want to be the best. And that's why I chose to be in the champagne space, because champagne is looked at as I said, it's supposedly the drink of the gods. You know, when George Washington and Lafayette, you know, celebrated in Mount Vernon, right? They celebrated with champagne that Lafayette brought over from France. So, I mean, this is the drink, and this is the space that you want to be in to be the best in this space. Now, this is what I can absolutely positively say. The first press is the best press. And every bottle of Sherline champagne that you pick up is the first press of the grapes. So no matter what other champagne is on the shelf, if they're second or third press, they can't win this game. They may be marketed better than I am, and they may have better colors than I do. But from a competitive standpoint, I know that I am bringing the best of the best. And if you're not bringing the first press to the table, you can't win this game. Now, the consumer may choose to take the second or the third press, but from a quality and what champagne is supposed to represent, we're bringing you the best of the best.
Do you find that the competitive reputation you have, is that founded? Are you that way?
Am I competitive? Absolutely. I mean, sports is competitive. Somebody wins, somebody loses. If you're keeping score, then you got to compete. And if you're not keeping score, then you're not playing. So I compete extremely hard, and I want to win, and I like to win.
Do you feel competitive with other NBA players who have wine labels? I mean, do you actually, are you taking it that far?
No. So that's the beautiful thing about, you know, to me that I've learned from sports is that being a part of a team, being a part of a community that works well together to expose the best of the best to the general public, it doesn't have to be all about you. It doesn't have to be all about you're the best and everything else. It's okay to say we are the best, you know? And I love that, you know, we got former NBA players that are in the wine space, current NBA players that are in the wine space. And we really do, although we're in the same spaces, we have different products. The champagne space is a very unique product. You know, some have red wines, some have white wines, but the champagne space is a very unique space. So we can all root for each other and help each other.
So I don't know if a lot of people, because in the wine world, there might be, you're looking at a whole new audience that may not be drinking your champagne because of your sports career. They might be drinking it because they've heard it's good. But you're looking at a whole new audience here. And I don't know if a lot of that audience would understand that, look, you know, you went to school at Berkeley, not just Indiana. I mean, you're a smart guy. And so I'm curious with, it seems like you're never going to stop. Do you have any other things you want to do in the food and wine space or in general where you're like, I'm always going to do champagne or wine or whatever, but I mean, what other kind of things are you looking at?
So what I've come to realize in my second phase of business outside of sport is that the connection back to the earth, the connection back to nature, products that are coming from the soil, on the plant, the fruit that's coming from the tree, using that to work with your body, those are the best products. So the two spaces that I'm in right now, the champagne space and also the cannabis space. And the cannabis space from a hemp and CBD space, that's where I'm at. And using the endocannabinoid system to react with the muscle gel that we have on the market and the CBD space, you know, I see the CBD space going into foods, going into toothpaste, going into, you know, all types of products because, you know, again, anything that works naturally with your body, Mother Earth has provided her sons and daughters with everything they need that comes from the soil.
That's great. Well, really quick on just that on that topic, how has CBD benefited you? I mean, does it work for you? Do you feel?
Yeah, so the name of my company in the CBD space is called Vessel Oils. That's V-E-S-L Oils. And had I known about the effects and the miracle working of CBD when I was playing, I definitely would have been using it. CBD basically helps to control pain and inflammation for the athlete. And that's the thing that we deal with the most, inflammation, pain, arthritis. You know, those are the things that really slows you down. Nights where you're having a tendonitis, you know, like we were trying to put the microphone together earlier and you saw how my fingers don't work. But what CBD has been great for me at is with my Achilles and also with my wrists. So it's definitely helped take down some of the inflammation, manage the pain and the arthritis that I was having. Now, again, we're trying it now with a couple of several athletes now who are playing professionally. And, you know, we've had great success with it. There are a couple of teams that are trying our product right now. Our muscle gel and CBD cream has 5,000 milligrams of CBD in it. You know, we meet the threshold. We don't use the THC in all CBD. So we're groundbreaking, trend-setting, and these are the two spaces that I'm in. As the Rolling Stones used to say, or I think it was Muddy Waters, champagne and reefer.
It's such a great song. I think it's funny to hear you, you know, just talk so openly and normal about all this stuff. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but 20 years ago, it was tough to talk about these products and make it acceptable. Yeah. I mean, you think we're going in the right direction, huh?
Well, we're going in the right direction in terms of hemp, and the hemp produces the CBD, and then you got the marijuana plant that produces the THC. And on the THC side, for the athlete, I think they're making progress there. I think on the THC side in society, they're making progress there also. Hemp is a plant that, you know, was used 10,000 years ago in our society. It's the oldest plant that's been used for manufacturing, biofuel, you know, building houses, building cars, so forth and so on. So that's the hemp space. And then the CBD space that people have discovered that works. And I think the cannabinoid system was discovered, I believe, in the 90s. So now you're understanding the effects that this plant has with your CB1 receptor and CB2 receptor and how it can really benefit you. So what I'm trying to do is, just like in the champagne space, is take it from the soil to the plant to the fruit that comes off the plant and make it work naturally with your body and get a great understanding of that.
It's great. I hope that other people, you know, for the most part, I can't believe how fast it's opened up. People have come to accept it so much faster than I expected. I think when I was young, champagne and reefer usage was not a, you know, it was tough. You'd be sneaky about it. And now all of a sudden it's kind of like everyone's like, yeah, move on. There's more important stuff to fight about, which I think is a good thing. I really do.
Well, I must, confession, I'm not a THC smoker. However, all my brothers did it and everyone in the neighborhood. But during that period of time, as you're saying, the way the propaganda around that drug was talked in such a way as a gateway drug, so forth and so on. And for so many people, you know, it really was. However, I think as time has gone on, you know, with the cannabis plant, they've understood the benefits that comes out of it medically also, which is where we at and just trying to, you know, expose it.
That's very true. There's so much. It's finally being able to be looked at from a holistic, complete plant, everything. And yeah, I'd love to talk more about this, but we're almost wrapped up here. But I want to talk to you about just some sports here, and maybe we can link it to wine. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, for me, it's hard for me to overstate how formidable the years when I was a kid and you were playing really are. I mean, it's kind of what set me into basketball. And now that two of my great passions are mixing, it is a very strange world to see this happening, you know? So, I mean, like, are there some games that you remember, you know, losses or wins, where you remember drinking something afterwards? We were like, I had this bottle of wine with this person. Maybe it was a defeat. And also, I should ask, when you're in a series like the finals, would you have a glass of wine when the finals is not over? Or would you wait until everything's over? Or I'm curious, because, I mean, I remember the 88 series, which I'm sure you remember like yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was sort of that one game where you exploded and unfortunately, the Lakers ended up winning on maybe a slightly controversial call. I don't want to get into that stuff. I'm just curious, after a game like that, would you have a glass? What would you do after that? Would you just go back to your hotel room and sleep? Do you remember?
So you have to understand who I was at that particular time. I was this 6 foot, I'm only 6 feet tall, but, you know, we all lied about that extra inch, right? And I don't know why, you know, now that I'm older, I don't know why we all fought for that extra inch. Like, oh, I'm 6'1", you know? Or somebody would be like, you know, 6'10", and they would say, oh, I'm 6'11". I don't know why that one extra inch made a difference. But, you know, back then it was like, oh, I'm 6'1", and, you know, but I'm really 6 feet. But anyway, it's like I was this crazy, maniacal athlete that, you know, my body was my temple, you know, and fish, pasta, chicken was all I ate, you know, while I was in the NBA. I had my spinach, you know, I was Popeye, salad. I did all the right things in terms of, I didn't drink. I wasn't a wine drinker. There's two times I can remember drinking in the NBA. And the first time was with Lambeer and Vinny. We were in Utah. And Utah is a dry state. We were staying at the Marriott. And fortunately enough, we got in and Lambeer and Vinny, you know, they would always, you know, have a, you know, a drink or whatever. And I would sit there and I would drink my water. And they always called me the no fun guy. I was the fun spoiler. And so Vinny, I never forget, Vinny goes, Zeke, I'll give you, you know, $100 if you drink this iced tea. And I was like, $100? He's like, yeah, if you drink this iced tea. I was like, all right, I'm in. So Lambeer is looking at me, and now I didn't know it was Long Island iced tea. So I'll never forget, I like gulped it down and he was like, yeah, drink it fast, right? And I gulped it down, I drink it, and I'm like, where's my $100? 20 minutes later, I couldn't make it to the room. That was my first time. The second time was really after a loss, game seven against the Lakers, since you bring up game six. Game seven, when we lost to the Lakers, and the Lakers, won the championship, and they were celebrating in their locker room. And I'll never forget, Lambeer and I went into their locker room, you know, grabbed a bottle of champagne that they were drinking, because we thought we were going to be drinking that champagne. We grabbed a bottle, came back to our locker room. He, Joe Dumars, and I sat in the locker room, in the shower, crying. I mean, just crocodile tears crying, you know, and vowing that next year, instead of drinking losing champagne, we would be drinking winning champagne. And we end up winning the next year.
Man, that's great stuff. I was 8 years old, and that was the series that's the first time I remember watching every game, being in. Everyone around me was obsessed with it. It's like one of the formidable sports moments for me. So to hear that gives me goosebumps. It's amazing.
Right? It was a very intense series, right? I mean, every game was like, you know, I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's one of the great series. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I think it's one of the great. Your performance in that game, I mean, that game six, I mean, it's legendary.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you remember what kind of champagne it was that you stole from their locker room? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. You know what? Now that I know what champagne really is, it probably wasn't champagne. It's like the stuff that we were calling champagne. I look back, that wasn't champagne.
Oh, so good. So good. So I guess, you know, before we wrap it up, I think I just want to ask one, you know, from your childhood, your early adulthood, anything, because I know sports dominated so much of your mind then, but can you remember a bottle where you're like, this is the bottle that made me think someday I want to get into wine? Maybe you had it with somebody. It could have been Boone's, to be honest. I'm just curious if you can think of a moment where it's like, maybe you didn't say I want to get into wine. Maybe you thought, this is different. This is something I never had before.
I can't say it was the wine experience that made me say, ooh, I want to get into the business. But I can 100% say that the people that I met in the business, that's what made me want to get in the business. And because I didn't come to this space being educated. I came to this space very naive, with open ears and open eyes. And the people that I've met in this space have truly embraced me and helped to educate me. And I still got so much more to learn. But their willingness to share and open and want the world to know, the spirit that's around this space and the people that's in this space, that's what's attracted me to this space. And then I've tried to make a business out of this space. So it wasn't the wine, it was more of the people.
I love it. I can't thank you enough for your time here. Thanks everybody for listening to the podcast today. Don't forget, SOM TV has a 7-day trial. And SOM Blinders is now shipping at blindersgame.com. For all of you restaurant workers out of work, if you cannot afford SOM TV, please send us a direct message and we will get you a subscription. Hopefully all this stuff ends, and hopefully I can see your beautiful faces back in the restaurant where you belong and where we all want to be. All right, until next time, be safe.